Canadian Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Well, not exactly. If you thought it was V. Paul Reynolds, then we fooled you. This is Matt Dunlap sitting in for V. Paul Reynolds here on Maine Outdoors. We thank you for tuning in. If you like to hunt, fish, trap, snowmobile, camp, bike, hikes, birdwatch, snowshoe, or do anything in the Maine Outdoors, this is the show for you. This hour, Scotty Bates, Norm Plord, and I, along with your special guests and you, will explore the Maine Outdoors. If you'd like to participate, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. I think V. Paul is way up north somewhere doing something fun. He did say he was going to be listening in, so we'll try to behave ourselves as best we can. Jim Layton said he was going to listen in too, our head engineer. I'm not sure that 1956 Ford actually has an FM radio in it.
Probably not.
But hopefully he's home by now and he can tune in. So I'm joined in the studio with our crack engineering squad of Scotty Bates and Norm Plord. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Matt.
So anything goes wrong, it's their fault.
Right.
So
we got big shoulders.
And we're going to have a dynamite telephone guest who's going to be calling in here in a little while. A woman I met when I went down to the Unity College Game Dinner. Ever been down to that, Scott?
Say again?
What? The Unity College Game Dinner. They have
it every April.
I've
heard of it, but...
Yeah, I'd actually contributed a lot of game to it over the years, but I'd never had a chance to go down. And this year I got invited down. And I thought, you know, it's not that far away. And it was unbelievable. And we're going to talk a little bit with that with our special guest, Kate Krakowski-Gooding. Kate Gooding is a chef, a self-taught chef, and she writes wild game cookbooks. And she's going to call in here in a little while and tell us about what she does and how she does it. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. But before we get to her and our trivia question, we have Outdoor Digest, which is brought to us each and every week by my favorite outdoor publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Yes.
Yes, sir. So now I've already done this. I have to do it for my daughter, Emily, but, you know, it's coming right up there, Scotty, coming right up. Doe permit applications are due August 15th. Mm-hmm. Don't do what I've done. Don't think of it on the 20th. Because it's too late by then, and there's not much they can do for you. So, that's for all any doe permits, and that's electronically by August 15th by midnight. Get your license, get your hunting license, get your fishing license, get your combination, get your super sport. They're all available online at maine.gov/IFW. And today on July 29th is the first day of the pre-bait season for bear hunting. The general season opens on the 28th of August. So, bear hunters, if you're thinking about bear hunting, now's the time to get out there and do it.
Get your donuts out there.
Get your donuts out there. And, you know, people joke about that, but
they work good.
It's the only thing that does work. I'd heard a lot about bear hunting when I was in the legislature. It was getting kind of controversial. People talked about donuts. A buddy of mine had a piece of property up in Alton, my old hunting friend, Harry Firo, and we set up a bait site because we both had access to commercial kitchens. We tried everything. And it didn't matter what it was. You know, you talk about, you know, roast beef or apples or, you know, whatever, lobster bodies. They pushed it all out of the way to get at those sweets.
I have friends who have lodge, and they use a lot of granola. And the bears really like fudge, frosting.
Yeah, anything sweet. You know, they like Friolator grease. They like bacon grease.
Oh, yes.
I know guys that will take a tire and they'll hang it in a tree like a tire swing, and they'll put it in so the sun hits it, and they'll smear the inside with bacon grease. And it sounds like it smells like breakfast cooking.
Breakfast, yeah.
So that starts coming up pretty quick. So, and also, I happen to stumble across this. There's a public comment period going on right now on an antlerless deer season in Eastport. They have a lot of deer in Eastport. We always talk about how tough the deer have it in down East Maine, but in Eastport, they walk through the streets. So they're talking about getting some permits for people to take antlerless deer in Eastport. The comment period on that closes on August 10th. And if you want more information about that, you live down in Washington County, contact the intrepid Becky Orff in the commissioner's office, 287-5202, and she can tell you exactly how to get that in. What do you have, Scotty? You had something you want to talk about.
I've got a couple things. Wife and I went to a fish fry at the VZ Salmon Club.
You did not.
This last Saturday. Boy, we had a great meal and great folks, and we ended up joining. So
yeah, the VZ Salmon Club has made a comeback.
Yes, they have, in a beautiful spot. Sets up high in the bank, overlooking the river.
Been there many times. They were talking about dissolving and selling the property, and the membership rose up and voted against
it. Yes, they did, and now they're trying to get members in. They've got a couple of things coming up. In August, August 16th, John Panola, the shad man, he's going to give a power plant presentation about shad, the fish shad. And that'll be after dinner. They're going to have a dinner at 5 p.m., and he starts at 6:30.
Yeah.
But the public is welcome to come.
They're good meals. I mean, all the salmon clubs are still going pretty strong. Yeah. We haven't had a salmon fishing season now.
No, but
about 20 years.
Right, but still it's just a beautiful spot to go and sit and watch the river, and you can fish for other things there.
That's right, and because I belonged to, and I have to pay my membership again, but I belonged to this Penobscot Club for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having a salmon license in the last few years. They had, of course, you know how it is. You buy the license, and then you never go, and then they close the season after that. Mm-hmm. But, the salmon are making a comeback. We're starting to see them in other parts of the state. And a lot of it's been some of the habitat work that the state's done over the last 20 years, taking out the dams and everything.
Now, they also, the following Saturday on the 18th, they're going to have an open house. Again, it's open to the public, and they're going to have fly tying demos and tons of food, and they're going to have a campfire that evening. So, they would love to have people come check them out and, just have a good time.
Yeah.
One other thing that's going on.
There's more?
There's more.
Outstanding.
Not with them.
Ah.
But on the 17th, 18th, 19th of August, the Family and Friends Bluegrass Festival down Palermo is going to be going on. And Jim's band, Freshly Cut Grass is going to be there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Billy Thibodeau Band is going to be there. Dirigo Express. And it's just going to be a good time. It's a good bunch of people. And
we're getting to that time of year, because don't forget all the country fairs are starting to fire up now.
Right.
I know the Northern Maine Fair has already gone by, and they've got the Potato Blossom Festival, which I think is also – has that already happened? I forget.
I go to it
every year, and I never remember exactly when it is. It always sneaks up on me. But there's a lot going on in the outdoors. We just finished up 3 weeks of summer camp at the Maine Youth Fishing Game Association. Had a lot of kids. Have a great time. I wasn't part of the camp program, but I did go out there, and I cooked a couple Fridays at the end of the camp. And a lot of kids, pretty happy kids with a lot of fish. The Maine Department of Inland Fisheries and Wildlife is a critical partner there. They do a great job stocking that pond with lots of nice trout for the kids to catch. So, and I know there are other camps going on, and, like I say, we're starting to knock on the door of hunting season.
Yes.
You're hearing the crickets at night.
I noticed that. My wife, her phone, it goes like a cricket when it rings, and I keep thinking her phone's ringing. It's the crickets outside.
Crickets outside, and that's a sure sign that we're getting into late summer.
Yes.
So, Norm, you got anything going on in the Maine outdoors?
Not really, except my garden, I guess, but I haven't been out there, much out in the outdoors since the early part of June.
Well, we got a couple of minutes. I'm going to tell a story because this is story time. I went on vacation. I do take a vacation once every couple of years. We went out to Vermont, and I always hire a guide when I go out there. And we were fishing this little narrow stream. I'm talking like as wide as this studio, maybe halfway up your calf deep. A couple plunge pools where it got, some plunge pools were 5-6 feet deep, and you got some trout holding in there.
Mm-hmm.
Just roll casting, 3-weight rod, and as we got up to this little falls, where the water was rushing down, and actually saw a little trout trying to jump up the falls. It was pretty cool. Saw something off to the right. There's a fish. Looked like it was dead. And I said to the guide, I think, a dead fish. I thought it was like a big chub, mm-hmm. You know how they get big. He said, I'll go check it out. And he yells over, oh, my God, it's alive. And it turned out it was about a 7-pound rainbow trout.
It was.
It got stuck trying to get up the falls in this little narrow rivulet. Couldn't get back down backwards or go forwards. And it must have just gotten stuck. He got it into his net. It's just about 7 pounds. He said it was the biggest fish he'd ever seen in that body of water. Mm. Got it up over the falls. It swam off to do its thing.
Well, that's nice.
Isn't that something else?
Help him over the falls.
Yeah, our act for conservation. Willie Dietrich, if you're out in Vermont, up in northern Vermont, and check out Catamount Fishing online, and he'll show you a good time. So. Well, I think that's all I have for Outdoor Digest.
Well, that's all from this end.
That's all from that end. All right. Well, Outdoor Digest, which is brought to us each and every week by the Northwood Sporting Journal. I'm sure we're going to start picking up a little bit as we get into the hunting season, near the end of fishing season. I know the guides are out there working pretty hard. Take advantage of one. Learn something new in the Maine outdoors. I learn something every time I hire a guide, and they do a great job. So we're going to take a little break here in a couple of minutes. Before we do, though, we have a trivia question. Now, because I have Kate Gooding coming on, and she's a chef, and there's a story that goes along with this question, and she's going to tell it later on because I read her bio. But when I was a cook for about 20 years, and I interviewed for a cooking job. It was to be like a sous chef lead cook. And they actually had a job interview where they had a series of questions they asked you, and this is one of the questions. And the question was, what is the most expensive spice in the world? And I knew what it was, and I got it right, and I got the job. And you can win a prize if you get that right. And the prize is going to be a Maine Gazetteer, Atlas and Gazetteer, brand new, donated with one of those fancy plastic zip cases that keeps it from getting all smashed to pieces in the back of your truck like mine usually gets like, by our good friends at the Old Town Trading Post. I went over there and said, yeah, I got to find a thing for the trivia question. And they said, well, it'll help you out. They donated it. And so the Old Town Trading Post, which is right up in my neck of the woods, if they don't have it, then you probably don't need it. Go see our friends up there. 827-7032 is the number to the Old Town Trading Post. And the Lorenzes will take good care of you, like they took good care of me. They're especially dialed in with kids. And if you have a young fella, young girl that you want to outfit for the outdoors, go see them. So they are the donors of our trivia prize tonight. And the question is, what is the most expensive spice in the world? And if you think you know the answer, give us a call at 1-800-966-1039. We'll be back with more in just a bit on Maine Outdoors. And if you joined us late, this is Matt Dunlap along with Norm Plord and Scotty Bates on Maine Outdoors. We have a pending trivia question out there in play right now, and that is, what is the world's most expensive spice? And we're going to be talking about wild game cookery tonight. You think you know the answer, give us a call, 1-800-966-1039. Do we have a caller standby?
Yes, we do. We have Joe here. Go ahead, Joe.
Joe, where are you calling from tonight, Joe?
Mount Desert Island.
Mount Desert Island, my home sod. Do you think you know the answer to our question?
Well, purely a guess. I thought the wise men brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh, so I thought maybe myrrh was a spice.
Actually, it's not. I don't know if myrrh is a spice or not, but it's not the answer to our question. But it's a good guess, though. Good shot. Thanks for calling in.
Okay, we have a second caller here. Go ahead, second caller.
Second caller, what's your name? Where are you calling from tonight?
Hey, Matt, it's Don Longto out in Ellsworth.
Don Longto. If anybody knows this, you do, Don. Not to put any pressure on you.
Oh, thanks a lot. How about saffron?
Well, I believe that is the absolute right answer, Don. It's absolutely correct. So let me tell you a little bit about saffron while we got you on the air here. And saffron is known for its distinctive flavors and its ability to give food a golden yellow color. It's derived from the stigmas of crocus flowers, and the places where they harvest the most of it is in northern Iran and the Kashmir region of Afghanistan. Those are the leading producers. Give you an idea how much it takes to make a pound of saffron. It requires about 75,000 flowers. So a pound costs around $1,500 compared to the cost of a pound of salt, which is just about 89 cents in the grocery store. So it's our most expensive spice. Do you ever use saffron for anything?
On occasion. It's good with rice. And
yeah, I used to use it making jambalaya. It's a key ingredient in jambalaya. Yeah. So, but how'd you know that, Don?
I'm an amateur cook.
There you go. Well, you're on the right show tonight. We're going to be talking to a chef who specializes in this kind of work in just a few minutes. So you stay on the line, and Scotty's going to get your address. I'm going to send you a gazetteer with a protective plastic sleeve that zips up for you.
Hey, Matt, do me a favor, will you?
Yeah.
Put a check mark every place there's a moose.
If I did that, I wouldn't have anywhere to go.
You're right.
Good luck in the season there, brother.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay. So, yep, that's the truth. The saffron is our most expensive spice. And I'm actually going to be giving a talk here in a couple of weeks at the University of Maine Rogers Farm, because, you know, you can get the boy out of the kitchen, but you can't get the kitchen out of the boy. I believe it's August 8th. I'm going to be giving a talk at the Rogers Farm about the use of different herbs and spices in cooking. And, you know, it's one of the things that, like Don, you know, if you're a self-taught amateur cook, it's a little bit of trial and error. And I'm going to talk about some of the most commonly used spices and then some of the ones that maybe aren't so common and some of the ones that you can grow in your garden and use in your home kitchen. And especially when you talk about things like wild game or even any fresh meat, spices have a really unique role in how we not only make things like burgers and steaks and roasts, but also how we use sauces. Norm, you make a lot of sauces at home? Norm has to run over to the microphone. There he is. Now he's running back to turn. Now he's turned on his microphone.
Now I can speak.
Now you can speak.
On occasion.
Yeah.
I don't do a whole lot of sauces, but on occasion.
Yeah. I didn't go to school for cooking. If I had gone to school, I probably would have become a saucier or something like that. But you take, you know, your average hollandaise and you throw a little tarragon into it, and you've got béarnaise, you know, that type of thing. So spices are pretty cool. You know, I actually interviewed for a job at one point. I think I mentioned this earlier. And this was a question in the interview. Is what's the world's most expensive spice? And you can buy it. You know, usually this little jar has a little, you know, maybe about a gram or 2 grams of saffron in it. So, but that's all you need to do an awful lot with. It's pretty handy stuff. So, so we're going to be talking with Kate Krakowski-Gooding. Like I say, I met up with her at the Unity College game dinner this spring back in April, and you know, they put on an incredible spread. Have you ever been down to that, Norm?
I never have.
Well, one of the first things on the menu, and we were talking about this earlier, and Jim was here helping us get set up, and his eyes rolled into the back of his head, and I said, yeah, the first thing they had on the menu was moose tongue pate. And I thought, ooh, I don't know about that, because, you know, I'm not a big organ eater. But I thought, you know, I'm here, it's on the menu, and I'm going to try it. And it was absolutely majestic. It was really, really good.
I always like to try pate because I don't normally eat it. So where we go fishing in Quebec, they usually serve it to us 2-3 times that week. And it's worth trying. I mean, it's tasty.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. And they had pheasant street tacos at that dinner. It was really, really good.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, they had a lot of amazing stuff.
We've got Kate on the line.
We've got Kate on the line, so we're going to stop talking about her and start talking to her. Kate Gooding, thanks for joining us tonight.
Yeah, do I hear you talking about my moose tongue pate?
Yeah, that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. And I think Kate will probably be a little bit more careful after tonight about who she hands her business card to. But
not really. It's fun.
No, it is fun, and you know, when you were calling in, I was talking about a talk I'm going to be giving at the university about spices and herbs coming up here in the next couple of weeks. And it's something that I forget that there was a time that I did not know how to cook. And it's a little bit scary when you go to the grocery store, never mind go on the moose hunt. You go on the moose hunt, you know, and you get drawn and you go and you take a beautiful animal and you get that big tenderloin. The last thing you want to do is screw it up, you know. And I think, and I think one of the great enemy of the cook is fear. And you've produced a bunch of cookbooks, which are really, really something else. That's, you know, a lot of talk. You talk a lot about wild game cookery, but I met up with you down at the Unity College game dinner, and you know, that very, very broad, expansive menu that you folks produced, and it was all just really, really incredible. So let's talk about what you do before we talk about where you came from and how you got into this. So what do you do? You're down in Bridgeton, and you write cookbooks, among other things.
Well, right now I'm almost done, I think, writing cookbooks because so many people are going online, and I'm trying to go down that track also. So I am presently a food columnist for the Maine Sportsman, and that every month I put a new recipe out for them, and I try to get them online on my website.
Which is blackflystew.com, BlackFlyStew.com. It's a great website, by the way.
Thank you. And, yes, so you can get the menu, I mean, all the different recipes there. However, of course, the Maine Sportsman has a lot more information, especially for all the hunters. But one of the things, I've been writing for them for a little over 2 years, almost 3 years, but one of the things I'm looking to do, you talk about spices and herbs, I'm looking to expand other people's horizon also in spices and herbs, and I want to try a little educational piece going through different spices that you can get locally and also ones that you can order online just to enhance your wild game meals.
Excellent.
And interesting enough, one of the reasons I started writing cookbooks was I got so tired of people saying, I've never had a good game dinner. And that just wigged me out.
Well, I think that's pretty understandable because, you know, I'm shocked at how many people don't know how to even, you know, cook macaroni and cheese from scratch, let alone out of a box, you know. So. I think that's part of the adventure that we're missing as outdoors people is that, you know, you go to all the work of learning how to deer hunt and how to fish or how to bear hunt or whatever. You get this animal and then you don't know what to do with it. So we're going to talk about that in just a few more minutes here. If you want to stay with us, folks, on Maine Outdoors, we'll be right back in just a couple seconds with more with Kate Gooding on Maine Outdoors. And if you joined us late, this is Matt Dunlap on Maine Outdoors with Norm Plourd and Scotty Bateson in the studio and Kate Gooding on the line, the author of many cookbooks and the master of the website blackflystew.com. And we're just starting to talk about outdoor cookery. So, Kate, we are just talking about, you know, getting people into the idea of expanding their horizons in cooking in different ways, and we got cut off by the commercial break, but let's expand on that a little bit, if you don't mind. What do you think, what's your thoughts on what are the possibilities for the average home cook in dealing with a game dinner?
Simple. A lot of people don't realize that you can create your wild game that you have gotten simply and deliciously. When I first started writing cookbooks, I talked to a lot of people because I got tired of hearing, like I had mentioned before, that they had a bad game dinner. And what I discovered is that the wives of some of the husbands that were hunting didn't know how to cook the wild game, and so they were cooking it to death. So then you get a very tough piece of meat, because they didn't braise it or marinate it or anything like that. And so then it was like, oh, this is a bad deer. This is a bad moose. However, you know, with some very simple techniques, you can make this a flavorful dinner, and they're going to want to be hunting all the time.
It's the method we used to describe in the kitchens as taking no prisoners. You're not sure about it. You just keep cooking it till you're sure it's not going to jump up and bite you. So
right,
yeah,
and that's what a lot of people do. I mean, a lot of people that aren't sure about game meat, they want to make sure they don't want to see their burger pink or rare in the middle.
Well, and I think people are afraid of game too. They're afraid of the gamey taste, and every meat has a unique flavor to it from a different type of animal. Obviously, you know, lamb tastes different than beef. You know, but they're not. You know, commercially raised meat doesn't have that sort of deep flavor that you get from wild game. And even among different deer, and you can get different flavors depending on how old the animal is, where it's lived, what it's been eating. And
yeah, that's the big thing is what it's been eating, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I'll just tell a quick story if you don't mind.
Please do. It's your show.
So when my show, okay, bye. So my husband and I had gone to South Africa a couple of years ago, and we went to this supposed to be famous place for wild game, and we had four different things, and they all, three of them taste exactly alike. And because it's because of, I found out, you know, well, I discovered in my own flavor tasting is that they all ate the same thing.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
So it was an impala, I don't even remember all the animals, an antelope, something else. And, you know, if you take down a game deer, red deer, or whatever, red buck, red stag that's out there in the game farm, you know, they're going to taste different from anything that you get out in the wild.
Yeah. Well, you know, oftentimes if you're taking, like, say, you know, you're going rabbit hunting, you hunt late in the season and they're not a lot of food, they're getting stressed, they're eating a lot of things like cedar bark or cedar boughs, they taste like cedar. Yeah, and I think that's true of almost, but I think it's part of the adventure, and I think that's where, you know, the different seasonings come in that can help with that. I mean, I think, you know, one of the trivia questions that we used to give to people as they came into work in the kitchens was the origin of the Western omelet, because everybody's had a Western omelet in a restaurant. You ever have a Western omelet, Scotty?
Oh, sure do.
So, you know, you have the ham, you got the, you know, the peppers and onions and whatever else.
Onions, yep.
And because, you know, the people going, you know, from St. Louis to Oregon, they didn't have 7-Elevens to stop at. They had to take everything with them, and it's going to take months. So they had put all this stuff together to hide the taste of the rancid eggs. Ah. You know, so...
Yes, and you say that because I used to growing up eating eggs, I would cover them with ketchup. Mm-hmm. So I finally thought, what is it I don't like? I don't like eggs. I don't like the taste of the yolk. So it's like, okay, I'll stop doing that. But, you know, it's the same thing with anything that you eat. You know, if you're covering it up too much, then you're either not preparing it right or you actually just don't like it.
I think that's a good point.
Ketchup.
Yeah, and, you know, of course, in French cooking, they call ketchup the enemy. Because it does cover mm-hmm. everything up, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, so, let's talk a little bit about that, that saffron question. 'Cause you said you had a saffron story.
Oh, I do. And it's really interesting because tonight I'm cooking with saffron. So when you told me what the trivia question was, I was like, okay, I got a little story here. So I'm trying to think how to call this. I'm just going to say that I sent my stepdaughter, Julia, when she went to India, I gave her $100 and I said, buy me some saffron there. So when she came back, she sent me $100 worth of saffron, and the street value here was almost $900. I don't know what else to say. It's street value.
Yeah.
You know, what else do you call it? You know, that's what the market was for here. The amount that I got was exactly like almost $900 worth. So it was a lot less expensive there.
Sure. Well, you're near the origin too.
Well, she was in India, so yeah. Exactly. That's where they were picking it all, and it's just been it. And I still have it. I have only a little bit left because it's been 10 years, but it still has lasted because you have to keep it in a dark space, you know, not a lot of light. It's been very well sealed.
Yeah.
And so spices will last, you know, a long time, as long as you can get them fresh in the beginning. And just as a little segue is, you know, I get most of my spices, if I don't grow them and I can't get them really good locally, you know, thespicehouse.com is one place that, you know, you will see in the main Sportsman that I write in that often I reference them.
Yeah.
Because I went out there and did a cooking demonstration for them one time and went through the whole process and all their different stores. They have like 9 different stores, and they get them in really big. And Patty Penzi Erd knows that I love, you know, the cinnamon that she carries, and she gets it in these huge burlap bags, and they're huge pieces of cinnamon bark. And do you remember tasting a fireball?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Is that what it tastes like?
What? This is exactly what this bark tastes like. It's sweet and hot, and it's just, you know, it's amazing. But anyway, so that's where I get a lot of my spices that I add on in, you know, through my dishes. I didn't want to get off too course, get off course too much. But yes, I'm doing a saffron and chicken broth, rice and couscous and wild rice, you know, along with some Maine squid tonight and a few other things. So.
Sounds delightful. You know, one of the things. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love cooking through the seasons, and we'll go into that a little bit more detail after you.
That's something that a lot of people have lost that art of, because you can go into the grocery store in January and get fresh strawberries, you know, and that was something that wasn't possible when I was a kid, not to say how old I am. But, you know, another thing about spices is that we use spices the wrong way sometimes. Like, we use, you know, paprika as a garnish, where, you know, paprika is the basic spice around, like, rotisserie. And, you want it fresh and you want to use a lot of it, but we just dust it over a piece of fish. And people say, well, I don't cook a lot of wild game. Well, if you buy a piece of haddock at the grocery store, I'm sorry, you're cooking wild game. And they don't farm raise that stuff. But, you know, the other thing too, because I don't want to overemphasize spices too much, because I think one of the things I've learned, and maybe you can speak to this too, is that, and you already said that, you know, being simple, sometimes, you know, the meat has to speak for itself. And I spend a lot of time, you know, as a commercial cook, trying to figure out some unique way to present, like, sea scallops, you know, because sea scallops are beautiful, but, you know, they're very simple. You can come up with all these different sauces. I remember we tried, you know, different combinations of peppers and other spices until finally one day I just put them into a skillet with a little bit of butter, and that was just the best way to do it. Just keep all that stuff away from it. Let the scallop speak for itself. And I think the same is true with a lot of venison steaks. You know, people like put like a heavy sauce or a lot of pepper on it, and they just take everything that it has to present to you away from it.
No, yeah, I agree. But, you know, I can't go close to a tenderloin with anything but salt and pepper, and my brother, who's a main guide, he would just go, But I understand.
Yeah.
I'm the same way. You know, when you're doing like a tenderloin, you know, but there are other tougher cuts of meat, which our barbecue sauce is really good for. Or if you are, you'll notice in my first cookbook, Wild Maine Recipes, that I did do a little heavier on the spices, but it was an introduction to people, try to get them to try these game. Like, I think I either did a bear or a beaver bourguignon. I can't figure out which one.
Yeah.
That's in the cookbook. And, you know, it's not heavier spices, but it's enough to introduce you to this animal. And it's actually really good with, let's say I did beaver, bear, raccoon. It's really good with raccoon too.
Oh boy, if you can cook a raccoon so you can eat it, that's work right there.
Yeah. Oh my God. If anybody is listening and they get a raccoon and, you know, in the season when they're eating stuff, bad stuff all the time anyway, but doing the bourguignon recipe, it's really good.
Well, I cooked a bear roast one time. Just basically put it in a crock pot with some stock and just let it go really slow till it started to loosen up. Finished up. Talk about you know, the perfect use of barbecue sauce. Just slather it with barbecue sauce and finish it up on a charcoal grill and kind of put a crust on it. Oh, yeah, exactly. It was just absolutely unbelievable. And, you know, a lot of people shy away from bear meat because it's really greasy. It's gamey sometimes. But, you know, it offers a lot to somebody who's a little bit adventurous, I think.
And also, I mean, one of the things people, you know, say that bear and beaver they think are really, really greasy, but both of them, the majority of the fat is between the fur and the muscle.
Yeah, you can get it off. You can get it off, absolutely.
Yeah, you can get it off. I mean, the bear is a little bit more. However, the beaver, once you get the fur off, and then you can very easily get, well, not very easily, but you get the fat off and
sure,
and then you get right down to the muscle. I kind of hesitate on that because this person locally at Bridgeton Academy was so sweet to me this year, Tom, when he heard my freezer actually bit the dust, my game freezer. When I told you the whole story. You know, and he kept calling me, okay, I got another beaver. I got a beaver, you know, so I had to go over there and cut everything out that I wanted,
sure,
which was, you know, fine. Oh, but it was, you know, it was a little more work, but it was fun. And if, you know, people should actually even try to get out there and do a little bit more of, you know, interacting in nature to get something.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that here in just a second. But first of all, I want to tell people who we're talking to, if you're joining us late on Maine Outdoors, this is Matt Dunlap along with Scotty Bates and Norm Plord. We're talking to Kate Krakowski-Gooding. She's an author. She has her own website, blackflystew.com. She is a very innovative game cook. and she writes for the Maine Sportsman along that line. And I met her at the Unity College game dinner and was just absolutely entranced by the dishes that they put out in front of us. So I asked her to come on tonight and talk to us a little bit. But this segment of our show is brought to us, as it is each and every week, by our good friends at General Appliance and Brewer. That's the place to go for your camp appliance needs there, Scotty.
Yes.
And that doesn't matter whether you're talking about gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or the top-of-the-line composting
Ride
toilets.
The
Ride the wave, baby. General Appliance at 91 Center Street in Brewer is your non-electric connection. It's a family-owned business since the 1920s. Al Elkin has found his niche in these changing energy times. They're there to serve camp owners with non-electric appliance needs. They service used propane appliances and sell parts for all makes and models, including the well-known Servel gas refrigerators. And as for those composting toilets.
Yes, and they have some of the nicest gas lights now. It's not like your grandfather's gas lights.
The ones that are hissing all night long.
The new ones, they are bright, they're clean.
Yeah.
They're really nice lights.
And they work on everything.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's one of their products or not. Give them a call at 989-3714. Stop in for a visit. Al will treat you right. And they also have pellet stoves. They've got, you name it. They've got it.
And they can fix it.
And they fix it, and they sponsor this segment of our show, and we thank them for that. So talking about getting back to, you know, when you go out to camp and you have that, you know, Servel refrigerator and that composting toilet, and taking care of your game. You know, a lot of people don't think, they get excited about the idea of hunting. You know, they learn with somebody, and now they've taken their first deer. And now it's like, what do I do with it? And people are thinking about the mount on the wall. They're not thinking about what goes in the freezer. And, you know, that's a critical moment.
It is. And a lot of bad meat has also been from not being taken care of correctly in the field. People don't understand that part of it either.
That's absolutely right. And because, you know, dressing off an animal is important, especially if it's a little bit warmer out. Get those in, get mm-hmm. it chilled down, get it bled out properly so you don't get, a lot of bloodshot meat. Now, if you're a real diehard and you want to make use of things like the organs and the blood, that's a different story. But that's much more involved than what you know. I've been a big fan of the late chef I just dropped his name.
Anthony Bourdain.
I've been a big fan of his over the years. And I've watched the shows where you go out to like Bass Country and they'll slaughter a pig and they use absolutely everything in the animal, including the blood. And, you know, and he'll say, this represents everything I believe in about cooking. And that just really speaks to me because, you know, cooking is more than just going through a drive-through window. You know, eating is we've kind of lost touch with that primal sense of where our food comes from and what it can provide to us. And it's more than just hamburgers. There's so much more in an animal that we can get so much pleasure out of. And I keep going back to that moose tongue pate, you know, something I kind of flinched at because I'm not an organ eater. I don't like liver.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, but I thought, you know,
well,
I'm here. Yeah. It's on the menu. I want to try it. And it was absolutely unbelievable.
Matt,
yes.
I have a new recipe. It's not a new recipe. It's a recipe that I do that you will like liver.
Cut it out.
No, I do not like liver at all. Mm-hmm. However, so I came up with, because I love foie gras. However, I do not like the process that the ducks are force-fed, you know, for a fatty liver.
Yeah.
So I make it out of moose liver. And my husband came up with a name, and it's called foie gras, F-A-U-X. And I have made it. I am a potter now also. And so I made it for the big Christmas party last year, and everybody loved it. So when our wild game freezer went and I lost the liver, I was so upset because I was bringing it to the Unity College game dinner, which you would have tried.
Yep.
And it's really delicious.
Well, there's a lot to be said for some of those, you know, sort of fake recipes. Like I have a sort of a fake recipe for Caesar salad dressing. That doesn't involve raw eggs, but it tastes exactly like the original Caesar dressing. And I've done demos with that in the past, and people are like, oh, wow, I didn't realize you can make your own salad dressing. People say that to me all the time. You know, they're so used to getting stuff out of a jar. So, But yeah, I'd be interested. I'm going to check that out because that sounds pretty interesting. If I could eat liver, that might be something new and different. It might help help my iron out
delicious.
A little bit.
I know people are a little bit nervous about some things, but I've only done it with moose liver, so I'm not sure about other livers.
Yeah. No, but yeah.
But one of the things that, you know, I do focus on is trying to make sure that everything that I do cook with is local and organic. And, you know, if people can shop at their farmers markets to go along with their wild game, they are only going to increase the flavor, and the recipe can be even more simple. Throwing fresh basil and some fresh rosemary on different recipes, you know, it's so much better than sprinkling stuff out of a jar.
And sometimes it's just plain cool. I mean, when you tie your own flies and you catch a fish on it, don't you feel better about it than if you just go down to Walmart and buy some lures? I mean, it's nothing against Walmart's lures. They're a great value. I'm not saying anything against that, but it's just different.
Right.
You know, my mother...
pride.
My mother grows... has lemon trees in her hothouse, and she grows lemons. You know, so I went up to Canada, went salmon fishing. I brought home a little grill because you could back. I don't know if you still can or not, but back then you could bring, I think, two grills home, a juvenile salmon, and I roasted a whole salmon with fresh lemon that my mother grew, and I still talk about that. You know, was it any different than the lemon I could buy in the store? Probably not, but that's not the point. It's about the act. It's the act of reverence of the food, I think.
Yes, and that's what we lose even when we shoot or kill an animal or trap an animal, you know? I mean, we don't thank the powers that be that we're able to get this animal.
Well, and we, you know, because the way we eat food has changed and the way we produce food has changed so dramatically over the last 150 years, we don't even realize how different it is. I mean, you know, we cooked pretty much the same way as our ancestors 100,000 years ago cooked, up until about the Civil War. We cooked over open fires. And then you had the wood stove and then the gas range. And then you had, you know, canning and refrigerators and freezers. And it's happened right under our feet. And I don't think, you know, for the new generation, like my daughter's generation, she's getting ready to be a senior in high school. I don't think they really understand what food means. You know, for our ancestors, we are always like, one growing season away from starvation.
And, right, and that's why I love cooking through the seasons. You know, in my article in the Maine Sportsman, you know, what do we have during this month?
Well, talk about that a little bit, because, you know, we have a, you know, CSA with a organic farm at a farmer's market, and you don't go buy a head of lettuce every week. You know, you get what they have available, and you make adjustments. Mm-hmm. But it does inform how you cook a little bit.
It does, and you're probably learning about some new things. You may even be getting fennel. People don't normally get fresh fennel, and they don't know how to cook it.
Oh, people don't know what it's for.
No, they think it's not in a jar. It's not for my sausage.
I thought it was a seed. I thought it was a seed you put on something.
No, I mean you probably do. You have does your CSA have fresh fennel?
Absolutely, it does.
Yes. Okay. So yes. So you know when we do a CSA, if people don't know what that is, you sign up with a farmer, and you're able to get their product every week of what is coming into season. And how wonderful is that to get it that fresh?
Community supported agriculture is what it is. So. Different farms do it in different ways, but you get what they're producing right off the field. So it's pretty cool, and it's very, very fresh. We only have a couple of minutes left, Kate. So I want to get out your website again in the last couple of minutes. If people have a question, they can call in 1-800-966-1039. The website is blackflystew.com. Tell us about the origin of black fly stew. It's a good story.
Well, actually, I'll try to make it brief. When my husband and I lived on Mount Desert Island, we got married in our backyard, and his best friend got all excited and jumped the toast.
Yep.
He said the toast beforehand. So he and his best friend got together and figured out for the toast was the top 10 things heard at Kate and Don's wedding. So the number one thing was, I heard Kate has a great recipe for black fly stew.
And it's kind of stuck over the years.
It did. I said, I have got to use this. And we got married in 2000. And in 2006, I started writing cookbooks. And I said, this is perfect.
That's awesome. Well, for people who want to check out her website, it's blackflystew.com. She has written several cookbooks, wild Maine recipes, simple gourmet lamb side dishes and wine pairings, free-range fish and lobster, and 50 ways to eat a beaver. She writes for the Maine Sportsman. She's pretty much everywhere, and you can check her out online. And she also does the Moose Pond Pottery. I grew up on Mount Desert Island, and my parents were potters, so we have something else in common.
Oh, cool. Oh, yeah, don't forget to look at the main segment of Andrew Zimmern. Bizarre Foods with Andrew Zimmern. I was on that also.
All right, yeah, check that out as well. And are you going to be at the game dinner next year?
I hope so.
All right, the Unity College game dinner next year, next April sometime. That's when they usually have it. Before we run out of time, Kate, I want to make sure I thank you for taking the time out of a busy Sunday to call in and talk with us a little bit about your experiences as a cook and some of your philosophies around spices and the use of wild game. I think I think all Maine sportsmen probably share that philosophy, but having that knowledge available to us is really, really invaluable. So I encourage everybody to check out the website and the cookbooks. I think you'll be richer for it as a sportsman. Scott, you got any last-minute questions?
No, but boy, you're making me hungry.
Well, you know, I do Cellar Door Vineyard down in Portland. I do a lot of game things there. People can watch me, or please feel free to email me a question if you think of something later.
Okay.
Very good. And what's your email? Your email address is Kate, K-A-T-E, at blackflystew.com.
Yes.
All right. Well, Kate Gooding, thank you for joining us tonight. This has been a great show. We're really glad to have you call in. Sometimes when people don't call, it's because they're listening. And this has been a great show, so we appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, and thank you, Scott.
Okay.
All right. So thank you all for tuning in. We're out of time. Next week, I think it's a mystery guest and a mystery host.
Right.
So until then, we'll
Norm
see you.
Norm and I will be here anyway.
Scotty Norm will be here. Who cares about anything else?
Right.
Until then, we'll see you next time or hear you next time. Listen to us on Maine Outdoors.